This podcast is sponsored by AAA, the American Automobile Association. AAA members get discounts on tickets, resort accommodations, and more at Walt Disney World and other Orlando attractions. If you book a qualifying Walt Disney World Resort vacation package at select AAA offices, you'll receive a free subscription to touringplans.com, as well as dedicated trip planning resources just for AAA clients. Go to AAA.com or ask your local AAA travel agent for more details on this offer. Hi, this is Len Testa, and we're back for another episode of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hill. We're continuing our walk through Disneyland today, and we're going to be picking up at Adventureland, which is the first land to the left as you walk down Main Street. We're going to go in a clockwise direction around the park. I'd like to welcome back Jim Hill to the episode. How's it going, Jim?
Good to see you again.
Fabulous. All right, so we just left the central hub of Main Street, and we're about to walk into Adventureland. One of the interesting things I think about Adventureland is different between Disneyland and Disney World is there's no bridge to get
to Adventureland.
So when Walt was spending money on the park, what was the land after Main Street that he first sort of that he wanted to prioritize?
Well, it's obviously again the Fantasyland was going to be the big carrot. You had your castle, that sort of thing, but he also recognized that. He had other things that the company did that he wanted to push. Mm-hmm. And for example, the first name of this was True Life Adventureland to, support the live-action featurettes that they were making during the period. Little interesting bit of Disney trivia. The first location of Adventureland was actually off to the right.
Where Tomorrowland is?
Yeah. Actually, more of the back of the house. In fact, Tomorrowland was going to be where it is, but they're going to throw Adventureland back into that. How it ended up over on this side was, again, more of a balance issue, also recognizing that they did, in fact, need back of the house.
Right.
But, yeah, Walt had originally envisioned, because, of course, True Life Adventure films starred real animals. It's like, well, why don't we do a boat ride that takes people by real animals?
Hmm.
And
Where'd the boat ride thing come from? Because he's a train guy.
Well, again, Walt loved all forms of transportation. In fact, there's kind of a famous story about the Rivers of America, where, he was looking out there one afternoon, and it's like the Mark Twain was going by, and, the rafts over the Tom Sawyer's Island were there, and Mike Fink's boats, and it was a very busy river. Somebody was standing by, well, what do you think, Walt said, what that needs? That needs another big boat.
No, it doesn't. You're looking at maritime disaster.
And that's where the Columbia came from.
Really?
Yeah,
because it is a pretty crowded waterway, given its size.
Absolutely.
All right, so Walt decides that he needs, he's going to do a boat ride, because he's, okay, so I get it. So he's got trains, he's got boats at this point.
Mm-hmm. He's all about kinetics, he's all about movement. But again, he's thinking, let's do animals. And the problem is that he then begins consulting with zoos and his own people who do the animals for the films. It's like, look, Walt, somebody's going to have to dangle meat in front of these things to get them to appear out in public.
12 hours a day.
Yeah, it's not going to work. And so they begin then exploring the idea of doing mechanical animals. And these are the early, early rudimentary versions of audio animatronics. But because they're mostly going to be in water, they're driven by hydraulics, or they're driven by chains. And so a lot of the aces for the company who do visual effects, the Bob Maddies, come to work on this thing. And they spend all the money, a lot of the original money for the park actually got poured into the Jungle Cruise, because it's like, you had to line the river with clay, because otherwise the water
would seep in, yeah.
And likewise, in order to build the rock work, to build Schweitzer Falls, that's a ridiculous amount of steel and concrete right there.
Really?
Who had
Walt assigned to do Adventureland? Who was
this?
This was
Hopper Garf. He was the first guy in. He did. You probably know Harper's work from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. In fact, one of the reasons that Harper was brought on board is that the early idea for the finale of the attraction was that you were going to encounter the squid from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
In the Jungle Cruise. Okay, interesting.
And that was the notion. Harper, you helped make this. You helped figure out how to make it work in a theme park. And it was like, Walt, it's foam rubber. We expose it to the sun. It's going to get destroyed. And actually, that's why Walt, again, still trying to make use of, what he had for materials in the parks, or, at the studio, They actually created a 20,000 Leagues walkthrough over in Tomorrowland.
Really?
In one of the empty storefronts, and the finale was the squid in a nice air-conditioned room where the foam wouldn't get destroyed. But yeah, the original end of the ride was supposed to be the squid rising up and menacing you.
Really?
So,
so they get the idea for Jungle Cruise, mm-hmm. and they start working on that. How does the rest of Adventureland get developed?
Well, it's honestly what kind of fits around the Jungle Cruise. In fact, this was the big ride for a lot of years. And, it holds a really important space in Disney history, because Walt was standing here one day in, like, 58. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Walt would come here on the weekends. And Walt would dress down and just sort of hang out, you know, just paying attention to his park. Was very, very, very diligent about making sure that, you know, things were quality. I mean, well, Walt was famous for sort of getting in line at a quick service restaurant and ordering a burger, a fries, and a Coke. And, you know, you'd just walk over to a trash can, take one bite of the burger to make sure it was, you know, it was cooked properly. Eat a handful of fries to see if they were warm, sip the soda to see if it wasn't flat, and then throw it all in the trash and then move to the next restaurant. I mean, he was, you know...
It sounds like a lot like what we do, actually.
Well, there you go. But very hands-on.
Yeah.
And so he was standing outside the entrance of the Jungle Cruise one day. And, you know, a mom and kid walk up and, "Mom, can we go in?" "Oh, we went down that the last time." And they just moved on. And Walt was like, "What?" You know, and that's actually where the concept of plussing came from. I mean, the Jungle Cruise has received no less than 5 different updates, adding new scenes. As recently as the 50th anniversary, 2005, that was when... You know, the exploding gorilla pool and the piranhas were added. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the things like the Lost Safari or the lion family helping the sleeping zebra, you know. the problem was when they initially opened this, a lot of the animals just did not work. That because, again, these are effects guys who are used to working in film and just they needed to work once, not 12 hours a day continuously.
All right.
And Walt would come to the park and would get furious because it's like, I paid all this money for these animals. Why aren't they working? And like 10 days ago, I got to talk with Bob Sullivan, who was one of the opening day crew people here and worked on the Jungle Cruise. And, you know, he was there. And he said Walt was on this ride every time he came into the park. And he would, you know, poor Dick Nunes, who was at that point the area manager for the side of the park, he'd climb up and down Dick left and right because it's like, hey, this is supposed to be a 7-minute long ride. How come it's 4.5 minutes long? You know, I barely got to see the hippos.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he'd go through each scene and it's just sort of like, okay, where are my effects that I paid for? And in particular, there was a trio of alligators that they were on a turntable that would rise up out of the water, open their mouths, and then sink down an effect he'd paid a lot of money for and really insisted upon, and it so rarely worked. And so Bob found out, you know, one day he's in the park and message comes over the walkie-talkie, code W. And that means Walt's in the park.
All right.
So, and they know that means Walt is headed to the Jungle Cruise. And sure enough, he comes to the Jungle Cruise, he gets in a boat, but this time they're ready for him. You know, Bob is literally in the bushes at the alligator scene at the on the Jungle Cruise, and he's got a fire hose. I mean, literally, they've hooked up to a hydrant that's 300 feet away, snaked it through the backstage area, and he's sitting there waiting for Walt's boat to come. And at that point, he puts the fire hose, turns it on full nozzle, and... You know, sends the water pressure down to the alligators. And he said, "There was the most impressive alligators I've ever seen in my entire life. They moved at speed, their jaws opened with enthusiasm, and they sank down." And
Walt's like, "Yeah, you nailed it."
It's like, "Yeah, it's working." It's like, not knowing that he was the only one who saw that.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, that was how it worked. But Walt loved this side of the park. He was always looking to plus it. I mean, if, for example, you know, if you think about where just the attraction we're backed up against here, occupies in Disney history, the Enchanted Tiki Room.
Yep.
Again, another one of these, Walt has an idea, but it doesn't quite go the way Walt thought it was going to go.
He didn't. You mean the fully fleshed concept of an entire room full of talking birds didn't come straight from Walt's brain?
Well, think about it. The first time out, this was a restaurant.
Really?
It was. I mean, it was literally. In fact, there's a poster that you can actually see. In fact, the new Disney Art of Disney Parks posters book.
Yeah.
That shows
it's a great book.
It's a wonderful book. But what's cool about it is it announced the three projects that are being built at that point. There's the Crystal Palace, there's the Tahitian Terrace, and then there is the Tiki Bird Restaurant. where, you know, you can literally, you know, the idea is you're going to sit there under the birds as they sing. And that was, it was, Harriet
Burton. That's not a bad idea.
Well,
you'd have to do like 90-minute shows, but.
Well, that was the problem. And more to the point, Harriet was like, let me get this straight, Walt. I'm going to be eating food under birds. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. You know, just sort of like, I don't know if this is something to go for. But they built the mock-up. And this is
a full-scale mock-up?
Full-scale mock-up of the studio. In fact, you know, Robert Sherman, the Sherman Brothers, tells this great story one day of, you know, Walt says, meet me down at Soundstage 2. It's like, all right. Comes in,
sure.
Sits in the dark and says, okay, fire it up. And he's sitting under the tiki room, and they begin to perform, and they begin to sing. And the show ends, and Bob Sherman turns to brother. It's like, that's great. That's wow. Isn't that amazing? He says, what is this? And Walt says, I have no idea, but you're going to write the song that explains what this is. And they're the ones who had to write the in the tiki sure. room to set the stage. But only at that point had they settled on, okay, it's a show. Even at this point, it was going to be, there was a time when it was going to be a show at the New York World's Fair. I mean, they were
really,
everyone recognized this was cool.
So that was 64, so.
Yep.
Okay.
But they had no idea what it was. And more to the point, when they opened it, audiences had no idea what it was. The first.
Oh, yeah, I mean, face it. It's.
First 3 months, people kept walking by. They just, you know, and it was one of these things where, come in and see the Enchanted Tiki Room. And it's like, and they actually had to put a Barker bird outside. They had an audiometronic that Wally Bogue did the voice work, and Wally did a lot of the voice work for this along with Fulton Burley, but he recorded a separate track of a bird outside that described what the show was. And
it's pretty clever.
Yeah, but the downside of it was they had to take it out after 2 years because it would literally stop traffic out here. There'd be 200 or 300 people out.
It's a bird that talks.
You know, it's like, come to the tiki room, fly to the tiki room. You have to come through the gate, you know, see this show. But this was the first e-ticket. This was literally, and in fact, at that point, you had to buy
Tiki room. Was an e-ticket.
Yeah, it was a dollar to get in.
A dollar?
Yeah. Well, no, wait a minute. 90 cents.
Wow, still.
But back in the day, you know, it was a very big deal. You know, you spent serious money to get in there, but you got your dough. You got a 22-minute long show. In fact, that's the irony now is that, you know, they've been systematically sort of trimming this show down because of...
No one would stand for a 22-minute show.
Well, no, the collapse of the American attention span.
Yeah, that's funny. It's funny that you mentioned that, within a week of Walt Disney World cutting down Country Bear Jamboree to 10 minutes.
Well, no, that's it exactly. That's the age we live in. And more to the point, this show kind of has the same issue that Country Bear does. That it's charming 1960s-style entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, today's audiences just will not. Again, I was just in this 10 days ago, and you know, 5 minutes in, you just see this sea of phones of people on who are checking messages or, you know, or texting. So
that's a shame. All right, so opening day 1955, we had Jungle Cruise.
Yep.
What else was in Adventureland?
Well, you had the bazaar area here. In fact, you know, you had shopping, you had food, and that was pretty much it.
One ride and some future plans.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you were getting 35 to 40 guests per boat. You had a fleet of 12 boats. You could hump a lot of people through an hour. And, you know, people walked away from this park really talking about how, you know, wow, you know, and the other thing that's fascinating, we talked about this yesterday when we were doing the DCA podcast, but so much of the jungle here mm-hmm. are trees that were saved from, you know, the construction of I-5, that when... The highway that led to Disneyland, you know, that Morgan Bill Evans, when he was building his jungle, would go out at 5 o'clock in the afternoon after construction was finished for the day on 5, and whatever trees were directly ahead of where the bulldozers were going to go, they'd grab and bring back to Disneyland.
That's amazing.
And so, you know, this wonderful lush garden was saved, yeah. You know, out ahead of a highway. So
I'll give Jungle Cruise credit. It's the theming that they have for that. Is sort of set the standard, I think, for the rest of the park.
Oh, absolutely.
So at the end of 1955, right, or, you know, right after the park is opened, mm-hmm. they're sitting back and they're looking at how people are using the park.
Yeah.
And what's going through their head? Like, is it, you know, do they know at that point that they have to build more in Adventureland, or does it sit for a while? What are they thinking after
it
opens?
You know, again, remember, this is one man's tastes, one man's decisions driving this
park.
One
man's dream, as it were.
Yeah, there we go.
All right.
You know, so here's Walt Disney building, you know, for example, making the Swiss Family Robinson film.
When was that?
Oh, that was 60, 61.
Okay.
All right. So again, you know, this side of the park has been, you know, it needs some TLC at that point.
Okay.
And
but the idea for doing a Swiss Family Robinson film probably dates earlier than that.
So. Definitely perking along. So, but Walt sees when they build the tree for the film, like, oh,
okay. So this was like late 50s.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so
and he's thinking, hey, I know where we could.
That's it exactly. You know. So while they're doing an expansion of the Jungle Cruise, while they're adding the new scenes, they take advantage of that to build the Swiss Family Treehouse. Now, what's kind of fascinating about that is that, again, nobody had ever built something like this. Had built
a giant tree,
artificial tree with you know, 250,000 artificial leaves. You know, it was a big thing then. And more to the point, Walt wasn't entirely sure that it was working. You know, Betty Taylor, who spent all those years performing in the Golden Horseshoe, you know, would typically show up at the park an hour and a half, 2 hours before the show. And her routine was always she'd have her breakfast at the Riverbell Terrace. She'd sit outside and eat her waffles. And one day she's sitting there having breakfast and Walt needs to see you. And it's like, drops her fork and runs over to the construction site for Swiss Family Robinson. And it's like Walt is running up and down the stairs. And it's like, Betty, thank you. It's like, and Betty is dressed in a skirt and petticoats and high heels. It's like, can you come up here? It's like, Archie, she walks up the stairs. So can you walk back down? It's like, all right.
Walt needs a cruise.
Yeah. And it just turns out that it's like, I need to know, are the steps far enough apart? Are you catching your heels? Do we need to reset them? And he said only he would do that. And it's just like, and it was like he, and she was just so flattered that it's like, I get input. And it's like, because it's like, if I said no,
it would have changed.
Yeah, but we're going to rip out the steps. And, it's like, no, these work. They're at the good height. And it's like, come up. And he brings her up to the top of this, still in the construction thing. Look at this. Look at the view. And isn't this going to be great? And it's just during that period in the park's history, that was, Walt was here. And so often, in fact, that I should have mentioned this during our Main Street section, but the thing is, he'd show up on a Friday night. He'd finish work at Disneyland. He'd get in his car. He'd drive here, and he'd go into his apartment that was over at they'd been a teeny tiny. I mean, seriously, this, it's maybe 10 feet by 12 feet apartment upstairs.
Wow.
And he'd spend the night there, and then Walt was always troubled by insomnia, and so. I got talking with the guy who handled Third Shift Maintenance. He said, you'd be working. You'd be literally down in the street working on the trolley tracks. And you'd suddenly realize you weren't alone. And there was Walt in his pajamas and a bathrobe. All right. He's like, hi, what you doing? He's like, well, I'm fixing the trolley tracks. It's like, okay, you want to get a drink? And it was like,
sure.
And I'm like, okay. So, and Walt has a ring of keys. I got keys to everything. And so,
my park.
He would just open, the place that Sunkist used to have a place that you could do freshly squeezed orange juice. And Walt would fire up the coffee maker and make, he's the one making the orange juice. And he would sit down and proceed to talk to the third shift guy about, well, what do you see? What do we need to fix? And he was always, if you worked in the park, he wanted to know what you thought. Because he would then, never forget everything and just, push that back into the park.
Was the, you mentioned the Riverbell Terrace. Was that here when immediately after the park opened?
It was. But again, it was one of the original food service areas for the park. But that said, you have to understand there was also where New Orleans Square is right now. There was the Chicken Plantation Restaurant.
The Chicken Plantation Restaurant?
Chicken Plantation Restaurant. Again, they had literally two or three buildings that were supposed to represent New Orleans, but again, they'd been slapped up fairly quickly. It didn't quite work the way they expected, and they turned around. And that, when it came time, when they had the Mary Poppins money, that was one of the first things. Walt, we're going to do this right. I'm taking my Mary, because Mary Poppins made $50 million in 1964.
So that was big money back then.
Oh yeah, and Walt was going to Vegas. All right, Walt was going to turn down the money fire hose, but poured it right back into Disneyland.
Really?
So yeah.
So Disneyland owes its success, the second wave of its success?
Very much. But again, Walt was always about you spend the money. You do. I mean, for example, you can hear the sweeper in the background here. That's from day one.
Yeah.
That it was always one of Walt's principles to the effect of, we keep this place clean.
Yeah. It's immaculate. The guy that just passed us, the maintenance person, is sweeping up like three leaves total. And it's amazing.
But, you know, and of course the irony is that we're now standing in front of Indiana Jones Adventure.
Yes, we are.
And, you know, this is closed for, you know, some fairly significant maintenance. This is, you know, there's a difference between Walt's park and the Disneyland park that happened after he was gone. I mean, you know, for example, think about it, that when this park opened, yeah, there were characters in Fantasyland.
Yep.
But Adventureland, you know, it wasn't built around a character. Here, this was during a period in the company where Disney couldn't make a hit film to save its life.
That was the mid-80s.
Yeah, and you know, they actually had to reach out to Lucas to get the rights. And they spent 5 and 6 different years working on versions of this attraction. In fact, my favorite version, the Bob Baranek, God rest his soul, he's still out there in the industry, but he actually slipped me. Romy, I'll get your shot of this. I've got the 3-foot by 2.5-foot presentation board for the Indiana Jones Adventure, the original version where it was the mine trains on top of the ore car, on top of the, you know, the Jeep. I mean, you know, what they referred to as the kitchen sink version. But what's great about this version of Indiana Jones is you literally took the Jungle Cruise to the midpoint and then got out.
Really?
You stopped in the back, and it was like you got out at an archaeological site, and then they just rolled the boats out back to the front. This then became the pre-show for Indy.
Wow.
And then, my favorite part of this version of the ride is that it's a walking tour of a temple.
Okay.
But you're in a group of 50. And again, I don't know if Disney's lawyers would ever signed off of this, but the 50 of you are standing in a room, and then something bad happens. And just the wall comes down in the middle of the room and separate. You're now in two parties.
Yeah, the lawyers would have needed more red pens, okay. I think, at this point.
But you had two guides. So the guides, it's like, okay, don't worry, I think I know a way out. And so one guide takes you off to the right, and you are having the Jeep adventure, while the other guide takes you off to the left, and you have the ore car adventure. And then you get back. There's a central camp that you all arrive back at, and it's like, oh, wasn't that ore car great? And it's like, ore car, I got a Jeep. And it was like the notion of...
I have to go on it again.
That's it, exactly. So, no, we should put that in the show notes. I'll get your shot of it. It's an amazing piece of art. Because, again, this is also the version... Literally, the train goes through... It's the scene in Temple of Doom where it's all of the, you know, the little children who are being tortured. But, you know, the boat's going through.
They're making iPads.
Oh, well, there we go.
Perhaps there wasn't clear in the...
Oh.
The CGI wasn't very clear.
I'm so sorry about it. But anyway, back to the shoehorning characters in over here. So we jump ahead to 99 and, you know, Tarzan's come out. And to be honest, Swiss Family Robinson just isn't that strong a seller in the Disney company. And they're looking for ways to bring characters in. So they decide, okay, we're going to do a character overlay for Swiss Family Treehouse.
Because what Adventureland needs at this point is Phil Collins.
There we go.
All right.
There we go. And I got to talk with James MacArthur before he passed away. And there was this... He was telling me the story about how Disney actually invited him out for the Tarzan event.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
You know, so he's here for the...
James MacArthur is...
He plays one of the sons in Swiss Family Robinson.
In the movie.
Yep. I want to say Willie. But anyway... Fritz. What ends up happening is it's so weird that, you know, that it's very strange to basically outlive your memorial. You know, just I'm here and it's like...
This is a tribute to the film that Walt made. Oh, by the way, now it's Tarzan.
There we go. So
wow, that's tough. All right, so now that Tarzan's Treehouse brings us to the end of Adventureland, why don't we pick up with New Orleans Square next? Great, fabulous. All right, so we'll continue that in the next show. But for now, this is Len Testa for Jim Hill. You've been listening to the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hill. Please give us feedback on iTunes and let us know what else you'd like to hear on upcoming shows. And we'll see you on the next show.